Welcome to Innovation Leadership. I'm Jess Larson, back with our mini-series, Transition Game, with my co-host, Terrell Mays, former pro football player. And he's going to explain a little more about this mini-series if you haven't caught the previous episodes in a minute. I'm excited to introduce our guest this week. Brant Walker is a Texas native. I'm going to give a quick version, Brant, and then I want you to correct me, okay?
Perfect.
So, had a great mom in Austin, Texas, followed his older sister who excelled originally in dance and skipping out of high school in a part of ballet, ended up going to Harvard and kind of showed him bigger things were possible in life and throwing a baseball and got it clocked at 64 miles an hour and realized that was not fast enough. So he spent his high school years really working hard on that and got to the point where he was pitching in the All-American game and got an offer from the Texas Rangers to go pro, but decided to go to Stanford instead and spent his first 3 years over there before going over into the Astro system. And after, 4 years in that system for the Houston Astros, was on to the real world life and needed to look at transitioning from a life really dedicated to sports to the real world. Brant, why don't you correct me there? And then when Brant's done, Terrell, why don't you jump in about why we're talking about Transition Game and why it's important to you and why you thought Brant would be great for the episode today.
No, Jess, happy to be here. Thanks for having me. And you nailed it with the background. I think being kind of dumped down to the real world podcast like this would have been super helpful for me just to think through, what was next and how to navigate it.
And what are you doing now?
Yeah, now, so I'm gonna have to nail this description because my mom constantly asks, what do you do? How do I explain it to people? I'm in private equity operations. So Alpine Investors is a fund in San Francisco with about $15 billion in assets under management. They buy companies, software services companies, and I'm a leader in one of those companies, a company called Sunworks, which is a commercial field services vertical. So we own businesses in Texas, and I'm the leader of those businesses.
Great. Terrell, over to you.
Nice. Yeah, so you hit it on the head. Transition Game is really all about helping younger athletes or even older athletes transition because, as we all know, there's a gap, right? We dedicate so much of our time and focus to sport that we don't really have a plan always. So I like to hear from folks like Brant, who I admire their own transition, so I can learn and help plant some seeds for the future. So Brant's a humble guy, so we're going to have to pull it out of him, but he's someone I definitely admire as far as the things he's done since he's played sports.
I think it's a great idea, if I can hop in real quick, just because it's almost like to me, there's a stigma against planning for the future, right? If you're not all in when you're in the moment, playing the game, you're thinking about what's next, your education or the job that might come after sports, then you're not locked in the moment. So it's almost like we're trained not to do that, but it should very much be a part of our plan for life, right? Because it's a very small window of time when we're actually getting to play sports.
So, Terrell, obviously, you did very well in pro football, but you took your transition very seriously. When you thought Brant would be a great example, what kind of things made you think that? And then why don't I let you take the next couple questions here.
It's funny. So Brant and I actually met in business school. And I think one of the things that helped me transition was going to business school. And I was planning on going there while I was still playing. And so when I met Brant in business school, it was funny. We were in the same section. So it was a small group, 70 students. So we spent all day together. And when we do our introductions, we have to say our past career. I said, obviously, I was a professional athlete. Brant didn't say that. So I was in the room, I'm thinking I'm the only professional athlete. Dang, that sucks, right? And it was maybe a few weeks or a month in, and then somebody's like, yeah, there's a professional baseball player that's in your class. I was like, where? Who is this guy? So I introduced myself to Brant. I'm like, and it was just so cool to me that he didn't define himself by, his success. That's a big thing to define yourself by, playing in the MLB, right? So I thought that was cool. And then I learned a little more about him. And this is a story I hope you can tell, Brant. Really just like that first day at class in Stanford. I think early on as a young teenager, you had a decision you had to make as far as thinking about chasing sports, dollars, et cetera, or like focusing on your education. I think that's this story he's hopefully about to tell is kind of highlights the type of person he is and the way he thinks about his future.
Yeah, so there was a article in the paper, the Austin American Statesman, when I was a senior, and it was the title of it was Books or Bucks, and it was basically this decision that they were outlining that I was making between going to Stanford or signing professionally, I think either route would have been fine, right? There's kind of merits to either side of it, but I think that ultimately there was a little bit of planning for the future, because I figured if you're good enough to ultimately have a long career in sports, then waiting 3 years and playing collegiately is not going to make a big difference. So, back then, this kind of ages me, but back in 06, when I was first drafted, the rule was essentially when you stepped into your first college class, then the team that drafted you lost the rights to you. And then you kind of went back into the system and had to wait 3 years before signing professionally. And so that was kind of it was actually a physical act, right, of walking into Econ 101 or whatever it was. But in my mind, it was like, okay, this is kind of the first step towards, yes, you're still pursuing this grander thing in terms of wanting to be a pro baseball player, but this is the first step towards, what's going to happen after your career in baseball, which is, getting an education and hopefully figuring out what to do with the rest of my life.
And it's funny. So, Brant, didn't you say it's literally to the point where the teams will show up at your classroom and try to prevent you from walking into the classroom?
Yeah, back then, I mean, it was almost like you have these 11th hour offers where it's like, hey, are you sure? Are you sure you're going to step in that class? And I'm sure there were some heated conversations there at the end. But for me, it was always pretty set. I mean, the act of obviously, packing up and driving to Stanford and moving into the dorm and kind of doing the college kid thing was probably enough for me. But it set me on, what was a first a college career and then hopefully the professional career after it.
So you made a good decision, went to Stanford, obviously a great school, went on and you made the right decision even more because you were still drafted to a Texas team, got to play for a few years. But after that, how was your transition? How would you say it was? I know the first few years for myself, even though it seems seamless to the outside, I had some struggles, I had some challenges, but I'd love to hear what you thought.
Sure. So really struggled with injuries towards the end. I tore my ACL in my knee and had took a full year off kind of rehabbing that knee and getting back to it. And it was just clear at that point coming back that my opportunity had passed me by. And so the Astros released me and, honestly just had absolutely no idea what I was going to do. But I think that the one thing that set me up quickly was, back when I had signed, I had negotiated a pretty healthy chunk of time. They would pay for school, housing, food, all of that, when I was done playing. So that could have been when I was, 25 or 45, but I knew that I had that in my back pocket that I had, I think I had the equivalent of, let's call it, two semesters left at Stanford, and they had agreed to pay for up to four or something. So it gave me a good buffer where it was, it was like, just go back, be a student, don't think about baseball and figure out what you want to do. And that was the first time kind of being a, quote unquote, regular student, right? It was nice. You took classes that, in the afternoon, for instance, right, where you couldn't take classes when I was there previously because you'd have practice, and it just trying things differently. I was pretty much finished with my major. And so that gave me a good, let's call it a good year buffer. And then, I mean, for me, it was just a matter of just talking to people I knew, people I respected who were a little bit ahead of me. And for that, that was mostly peers, right? People who had graduated my year at Stanford or friends from high school who graduated from college and were off in the real world doing different things. So I graduated with a biology major, had no intention of doing anything with that. I mean, people were either going to medical school or they were going to do research in a lab, and that was not interesting to me. But one of my best friends from high school was in executive search, executive recruiting, which is an industry I'd never heard of. But he basically said, hey, it's this opportunity to talk to people. You kind of learn how to sell the opportunity, sell the client on the the candidate. And so essentially it was, you know, it was like apps on your phone, those types of companies. Companies like Google were clients early on where you're finding executives for them. And I basically just leaned on my Stanford network to find a job in that space. So there was a boutique firm that a Stanford grad had started, and you know, having that connection clearly helped me get that role. And to me, it was, you know, it was first graduate from college, and then at that point, you know, just kind of gain a skill set, right? That'll set you up for success moving forward. So that was kind of the first 3-year stint, was to me kind of just finish school, get your feet wet in the real world, you know, and learn a skill, which for me was basically sales.
Nice. Going back, how did you know to negotiate that buffer for the back end of your career? Was that something someone taught you, or was it kind of your own intuition?
No, it was pretty typical. But I think what I would say what's different is I did recognize at the time that I had some leverage before I signed to negotiate things like that. So typically, I think what they'll do is kind of a cookie cutter agreement in terms of dollar amount or that kind of thing. But recognizing that I had a little bit of leverage when I was drafted, just helped me negotiate extra time to finish up school.
Curious. I think me and you talked about this before. You made some pretty good decisions with your money management, right? I know from what I understand, baseball, a lot of times it's kind of, you get a signing bonus and then you're expected to kind of survive off of that until you make it.
Right.
And it's kind of a tricky situation for a lot of athletes. How did you kind of navigate that?
Well, not super well. I mean, I think I got a little bit lucky in that I probably just froze and didn't make some of the bad decisions that some people make. But you know, you show up, you saw it the same way, Terrell. It's, you go to the player parking lot and there's a bunch of brand new cars, and I had my 2001 Nissan Pathfinder, and you know, I had people drafted in similar rounds to me that had, you know, new Lexuses and BMWs and things like that. And you know, to me, there's a chance to protect that nest egg early on. And I will say it wasn't, you know, something I consciously did. I had a mentor who, you know, I kind of met by chance, but he had basically said, look, like I recognize that there's a lot of things you can do with your money, but just trust me to take care of it. And I'll show you, you know, what I do with my fund and how I invest. That's what ended up being, you know, a big chunk of my career was actually working for him. But yeah, I think safe to say, it's so tempting. And that's kind of the age old story you see, is people spending more than they earn, or spending all that they earn.
So can I jump in on this one? Last week I was in your hometown, out in Austin at South by Southwest, and my friend Tara, they do debt financing against player contracts. And
okay.
What they're doing a little different than other folks is spending a lot of time on investment knowledge and like trying to help these athletes add that skill set so that they don't become one of the statistics at the end of having gone through millions of
sure.
dollars and not having somebody show for it. And
sure.
So I guess my question is, like, let's say there's, you know, a kid who's about to get signed, or there's somebody who's a pro now who is recognizing that this is something they want to spend more time, or really anybody in their career who's saying, like, oh, I've been so focused on making money, what about keeping it? What about growing it? I'm such a nerd for Warren Buffett principles, but what's a principle that you feel like has served you well when you think about solid investment choices?
I got a little bit lucky in that I got hurt, because it gave me that full year off. And that was when I had, you know, an hour or two a day of rehab, and then I had the rest of the day absolutely nothing to do. So the choices for guys who were in rehab, you know, play video games, go to the pool, or do something like that. And I took that year just to kind of get smart on finance and that kind of thing. So that would be first. And it kind of goes back to what I touched on at the beginning, which is you can both be completely locked in and focused on your sport, your craft, but also have an eye towards your nest egg, right? I think it's super important. You're setting yourself up for success. You're setting your
you know, your family or your future family up for success. So it's super important. I think that, well, that I have any Warren Buffett like advice. I do think it keeping it as simple as possible, because there's absolutely no way that given people's schedules and their, you know, the training demands, things like that, that you're going to be trading stocks or you're going to be researching companies or that kind of thing. So keeping it simple with a low, you know, a low fee index fund is probably good for, you know, 95% of people. I think what's always helped me is, just about any time I get a paycheck or, you know, a bonus or whatever it might be, I do like to just earmark a little bit of it for a splurge, because I feel like if you just kind of get that one little bit out of your system, maybe it's a nice meal. If it's a big check, then maybe sure. Maybe it's a car or whatever it might be, but you gotta make that a small portion of what you're, you know, what you're spending and try to save the rest, because, you know, compound interest is real. And, you know, unfortunately, I think just because people are so focused on their careers, they're not thinking about those financial principles.
Well, you said you weren't going to give Warren Buffett advice, and then you did. You know, the number one thing that Warren Buffett says is like, hey, if you aren't going to take the time to understand the difference between what a company is worth versus what its share price is,
right?
Then that's his recommendation. Like, he's always talking about, you know, the Vanguard index funds or these just very, very low fee index funds. And there's obviously some point where there's so much passive investing that you know, it does some funny things with the stock market, right?
Right.
But this concept of like essentially just make one investment, like bet on America, right?
Right.
Own a cross section of the biggest companies across the country and often globally. And you know, that's an investment that for decades and decades and decades, it has its ups and downs, but if you hold it long enough, like that's proven to be a winner over and over, right? And obviously he's a believer in trust someone like him and have a fun type situation where you've got somebody who is following all the companies and making decisions. But
right.
But it is interesting how like unsexy yet how solid that advice is, right?
Yeah, it's really hard because you want to chase the immediate return. You know, you've got cryptocurrency, you've got these the GameStop and those types of equities that create headlines, and it's hard because it ends up being a lot like gambling, and there's a reason why gambling is an industry, right? It can be addicting. But yeah, keeping it simple, which again, like that, if you're doing that when you're playing ball, like it lets you focus on the things that matter at the time. And, you know, it's a slow, steady race that always gets run. So the people that win are doing the unsexy things.
Yeah. So maybe just one more question before I hand it back to Terrell. When you think about the work ethic and the willingness to take guidance from a coach and, willing to like the team aspect of really getting dialed into what's going on with the other people, how do you feel like that helped you excel once you got into your career? Like, how did that apply?
To me, there's really two types of success in business broadly, if you wanted to kind of bucket it into two buckets. And it's there's very technical engineering type talent where you can code the best, or you have some knowledge about some type of engineering or something like that the other people don't have. But the other is just broadly, it's leadership, right? And at the end of the day, that's the big advantage that all of us who played sports have, right? Is you've been in a team environment, you understand that dynamic, you understand what it takes to win as a team, you understand why people lose as a team. And business is no different. You're dealing with, you know, 50 different personalities in the office, and you're always going to rub some people the wrong way, and you're always going to rub some clients the wrong way. But ultimately, if you can kind of create consensus consistently, you're going to win in the long run. And so that to me, I feel like people who are coming out of sports often, you know, I don't know, I feel like imposter syndrome gets overused, but there is some element of that. It's like, well, I've been playing football for 10 years, so how can I go be a leader, or how can I go sell this thing to this person? And it's like, well, you've really been doing it your whole career, and in many ways you're, you know, at a higher level and more intensity and scrutiny than other people have. And so I think taking that confidence into the business world is what leads people to be successful.
Makes sense. Terrell, what does this make you think about?
No, yeah. That's... Huh?
What's this making you think about?
No, yeah, no. I think that's spot on, and it took me a while to realize it. And I think Brandon and I have talked about that offline before, so it definitely resonates. I wanted to go back. I'm curious. So it sounds like some of the keys for your success were kind of mentorship, utilizing your network, investing in yourself with the free time you had. So you took advantage of a lot of opportunities, but if you could go back and still give some seeds to your younger self, knowing what you know now, you know, hindsight's 2020, what kind of advice would you give yourself?
I think the biggest thing I would have done is just have a more defined idea of what's possible coming out of sports. And for some people, maybe sure that's too late. They're transitioning out already and they're not sure what they want to do. And I think I'm kind of here to say that's okay. But I left baseball not knowing what consulting was. Consulting is a great career. I ended up working at Bain, which is a great consulting firm. I had no idea what Bain was until I was done playing baseball. I think just being curious is a great trait to have. And it's not one that I have sort of innately. And so to me, it's just all about asking questions, figuring out what other people are doing that might seem interesting to you. And then just taking some portion of your time to pursue something outside of sports. I mean, if you think about it, someone is playing a sport at a high level, like who does not want to talk to that person? I mean, anyone would take a phone call. If you said, hey, I'm a linebacker for the Cowboys. I'm thinking about what's next for me. Would you mind grabbing a cup of coffee with me? Like, who's not going to take that cup of coffee, right? And so maybe just investing some time in the off season when things are quieter in terms of what could be next for me, because the reality is, I mean, you can, you know, spout off statistics all day long, but the majority of people aren't going to make enough money to retire and go, you know, live on the beach for the rest of their lives. Right. And so it's just a smart investment in yourself to think about what's next. And I think that's why this is just a great conversation for people to be having.
Honestly, yeah, I couldn't agree more. That's one thing I regret. I didn't take advantage of my celebrity while I had it enough, right? I think I did to some extent, a little more than others, networking, but definitely could expose myself to a lot more.
But here's what I mean. When thinking about this conversation, thinking about people's transitions that I admire, like yours is one of them, because I didn't think to even apply. Like, business school was important to me, and I landed on that eventually. I thought, okay, I need to go back and gain these skills and get this degree because it's going to be important for my future career. But I never thought the moment I was done playing baseball, hey, go apply to business school. That experience is worthy of an application, which it absolutely is, obviously, right? And so there's some folks who clearly got to that decision faster than I did, and I think it's paying dividends for them now.
Definitely. Another question, kind of switching a little bit. What do you think are some of the things that help smooth the transition? I know for me, you know, I leaned a lot on family. I leaned on some not so sexy things at times, but definitely family was a big part of being able to transition and having that support system around me. I'm thinking about when you were going through, obviously you're dealing with an injury. So it's like a lot of things creep into your head around, you know, you associate your identity with your ability to perform and that just being ripped from you. And so, like, what kind of smoothed out that transition for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think what comes to mind is just creating some buffer from feeling that sense of urgency to go perform in that same level in the real world. And that can be, there's, you know, almost limitless things that could be an injury, right? Like, for me, that created that natural year-long buffer. I wasn't going to go play, right? So it gave me time, but it forced me almost to sit down and think about what was next. I think going back to school, whether it's finishing an undergrad degree or starting an undergrad degree or a business degree or something like that. And then I think the third thing can also be for those who are smart with their money, right? You can give yourself a buffer and say, hey, I'm going to spend, you know, $50,000 this year on myself, whatever it is, learning how to code, or maybe it's just having conversations with people to figure out what could be next. But I think people run into issues when it's you know, they are sort of dumped out into the real world. They have not been financially responsible or have not been able to be, you know, financially independent. And so you sort of just revert back to what you know, which ends up being, you know, maybe what can I leverage that I have to survive? And I think that and often ends up being, you know, you often see people who end up, you know, doing lessons or coaching or whatever that might be, not with the intent of, hey, I want to go be a coach as a career. And so it ends up being kind of this stopgap, but then you look up and it's been 5 years and you haven't really further developed yourself as a professional.
You know, it's interesting. That honestly, that motivated me to pursue business school. I was lucky enough, obviously, to play 8 years. So I was able to kind of watch a good amount of people transition, our former teammates, and see, and just like kind of learn from there what they went through. And one of the things I was like, I decided I don't want to be a coach. I do not want to be a coach. Like, what can I do? I'm like, I felt like I didn't have any skills. I didn't recognize the skills that, you know, sport brought me as far as assets to bring to the organization or company. So I was just like, I need to go develop my skills. So I was like, let me throw myself into business school, right?
Right.
And that was kind of my motivation.
You know, clearly nothing wrong with wanting to pursue a career in sports as a coach or as a GM or whatever it might be. But again, like, think about the, you know, if you're playing and you go to your GM or you go to someone in leadership, you know, at the team and say, hey, I'm thinking about what I want to do afterward, they're going to be so receptive to that conversation at that point. Say, hey, can I shadow you for a couple of weeks in the off season to learn about what it's like to be a, you know, assistant GM of this hockey team or whatever it might be. That's the time to do it, right? Not when you're forced to make that decision.
Right. And then for me, it was because I threw myself into school directly after. I think I was sitting in the classroom when my retirement papers got processed. So it was 2 years I was completely busy and focused on a new challenge. But it just kind of, for me, it's the effect of, or the impact of being, you know, done with sports. Football is over for the first time since I was in third grade. And it still hit me, but it way, you know, business school kind of delayed it and it softened the blow, I think, like to your earlier point.
Sure. Yeah. I think you and I, as you know, differ in terms of our passion for the sport that we played. But I completely agree. It's like, maybe it's not missing the sport per se, but you're missing the routine, right? I mean, you were locked into the same system every single day, whether it's, you know, a workout or a practice or a game or travel or whatever it might be. And so I think that can be shocking and daunting for someone who just says, well, wait a minute, I don't have anything on my schedule now for the first time in, you know, 15 years since I was, you know, playing high school football or whatever it is. And that is where, you know, these are all people who have excelled at the highest level. Like, you have the skill set to go pour that into something else. It just takes a little bit of intentionality to figure out what would make me happy waking up and, you know, doing X, Y, Z for the next, you know, 20 years of my life. It just takes a little bit of time to figure that out. And I think creating that natural buffer for yourself to give yourself space to do it when it's not, you know, high pressure is the right way to think about it.
You know, this, I've got a question for both of you. I'd love you guys to answer. I think about how much the school system and society teaches us to do things alone. You know, like, if you collaborate on a test, they call that cheating. If you collaborate on your homework, they call that cheating. If, you know, like, you know, sales commissions are paid to you individually. You know, the professions that get talked about so much when you're a little kid, you know, doctor, lawyer, accountant, these are like very often about you and your success and your degree and your, you know, like, a lot of lawyers talk about their organizations as like a collection of like co-opetition, right? Like that, it's very, not very much not a team sport in many firms, right? And we get taught individualism so much. And then you look at like the highest achievers in the business world, and, you know, I get to interview them on the show all the time, you know, $0 to $1 billion companies or tens of billions. And they're like, oh, it's about the team. It's about getting like genuinely getting people better than you to want to join the team and people that you can trust to take over this. And like, I think about that Michael Lewis Moneyball book that got made into the Brad Pitt movie and this concept, like I really see it. And I want you guys to weigh in on this with the guys who played pro sports at the highest levels and like the most elite special operations unit guys, where it's like the special ops version is, you know, these guys in the classified units, like full on Jason Bournes, right? Like you throw them out of an airplane and they lost all their gear and all they've got left is a Bic pen. They're still going to go accomplish their mission, right? And they're going to adapt and overcome and they're going to think, and they're extremely good at relying on each other. And it's family-like in many ways for these guys, right? When you think about those parts of professional sports, those elements of like really being able to know what each other are thinking and actually caring if the other people on the team are doing well, as you get further in your career, can you talk about the higher levels of business and how, you know, sometimes that individualism can hurt businesses, where this like genuine concept of true team, not just talking about team, can help you excel? Brandon, you want to go first and then Terrell?
Sure. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. We have sort of a unique opportunity where we're providing folks the chance to own a P&L straight out of business school. It's essentially the kind of the main role I'm hiring for. And the profiles we look for, like after we, you know, hang up here, I'm talking to a transitioning professional baseball player. So we talk to transitioning professional athletes, and we talk to what you said, you know, military special forces type people, or really any people who had leadership. And I think it's because they were from a very early age, both in sports and the military, you're thrown into leadership positions from day one, right? So if you're a commissioned officer and you're 22 years old and you graduate from West Point or wherever, and your job on day one is to lead this group of, you know, 30 people who, you know, 30 of 30 have been in the military longer than you have, right? And they're all reporting to you and they know more than you, they have more experience than you, but you have to figure out how to lead them. Like that's a very serious skill to have. This, you know, translates to sports as well. And so I often say, like my role, I say I'm chief talent officer, because my entire job is to hire A players, right? Just hire great people who are smarter than I am, and just get out of their way, right? Like I can, at the highest level, I can help them think through strategically, you know, I can help them think through the financial pieces of things. But at the end of the day, the goal is, you know, how do you hire A players? Because A players then hire other A players, and that's how an organization works. And I think whereas in sports, it's often kind of confined to the field, right? You have one team of 11 guys or 9 guys or 5 guys or whatever it is. Businesses are massive, right? There's just absolutely no way that one person is ever going to make an outsized impact across an entire organization. There's just not enough time in the day. There's too many emails, phone calls, meetings, that kind of thing. And so, yes, you have, you know, you have a group of individuals who are, you know, all working towards one common goal. But at the end of the day, a business is just a team. Everyone's playing their part. Everyone's playing their role. And so ultimately, it's just about how do you create that cohesive unit that all, you know, goes further together than everyone can go individually.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah.
I was going to say, just building on that, for me, obviously, I'm in a sales organization. I have a big number I have to hit, right? It's my individual number. Then I look at my manager. She has my 10 teammates, all of our numbers combined, right? So if I have a $40 million quota, she has a $400 million quota. So
Just quickly, how long have you been at Microsoft?
Oh, it's been 5 years now, which is crazy to say. Nuts, right? But so really the thing that sports taught me is a lot about accountability, right? And it has to be authentic. So understanding that my number is part of her number and how my incremental impact will affect her, and caring about that, right? So And it's about building relationship beyond just, the work environment. So if you really actually care about the person, so it's like Brant said, it's a big organization. Microsoft's obviously huge, but if I think about doing my piece of the puzzle with the known impact it has on the people I care about within my team, it's going to drive a greater result, right? So being authentic about that and really genuine about your intention. So sometimes I have to step outside of my role and do things I don't necessarily want to do, but it's for the greater good. I learned that on the field, right? I don't want to have to chase that guy down because you missed a tackle, but we're trying to win this game, right? So I think taking those principles over is just innate, right? So, and it's funny, I was talking to my wife about this the other day. She's a track athlete. So obviously it's a little more individual. So we're talking about what's more important, how you perform or how the team performs, right? And I think forever it's just going to be inside of me thinking about the team first.
Brent, if people want to connect with you or follow you, is LinkedIn a good place, or where are the best places online?
Yeah, LinkedIn's probably best. I'm not all over social media, so feel free to connect on LinkedIn. I'm always happy to chat with folks who are transitioning, and I've been there, right? So happy to help.
And what's the company website as well?
Yeah, so the group of companies that we're running is called Sunworks. So it's sunworkslp.com is the website. We're a growing group of commercial landscaping companies across the country, and in very early innings. So it'll be exciting to see where we go.
That's exciting. Well, what's one of the best pieces of business advice you ever heard? Maybe it's a good place to end.
I think the biggest mistake people make is they don't ask questions and they don't ask simple questions. So I would say the biggest thing to me is just always be that person that asks the basic question, because if you can't get a basic answer back, then the person that you're talking to doesn't understand either. And so it goes back a little bit to that curiosity piece, but don't be afraid to speak up. There's probably someone else in the room who has the same question as you, and you very rarely regret asking the question that pops into your head.
It's funny. I've heard this advice from a lot of people I respect over the years. One of them was the CEO at, she was the CEO at Raytheon Missile Systems. And she said that, there's such a fear of looking dumb that we end up injuring ourselves by over that short-term thing. And that, she was, anyways, obviously senior leadership, tens and tens of millions of dollars. And that what she said is like, when somebody would, some smart person who's a specialist something would come talk about something, and she would be the one to raise her hand and be like, I don't get it. Right? What does that word mean? I've never heard that word. Even though she's in charge, even though she's supposed to be, she felt like she's supposed to know these things or whatever, she just decided, no, it's okay. I'm an expert at what I'm an expert at, and it's not that. So what's the answer? And she says, as soon as she would ask a question like that all of a sudden all these people would be picking up their pens. Because and it's like also you realize like, oh, 80% of the people, this people didn't know what that word was either. I was just the only one with enough guts to ask. And
Right.
it's interesting, right?
Yeah, there's like this, it's almost like protective of your little corner of the kingdom where it's like, I'm going to make this financy term sound very complicated because I want to sound like I'm smart. But at the end of the day, I mean, you got to be able to, I always say explain like I'm five. It's just, if you can't do that, then you don't truly understand it.
Yeah, no kidding. Terrell, we haven't brought this up on previous episodes, but is LinkedIn the best place for people to follow you, or are you somewhere else, or what's good?
Yeah, LinkedIn's probably going to be the best place to connect with me. I have a social media presence, but I'm not active, unfortunately. I should
Yeah.
be better about that.
Well, I'm going to ask you the same question. What's one of the best pieces of business advice you ever received?
Honestly, you made me think about that. There was two things that came to mind. I think the first one was, and it kind of builds on what Brant was saying. Sorry, if you're the smartest one in the room, you're in the wrong room, right? So you have to always put yourself in positions to learn and grow. That and then when you have a goal, just break it down into smaller goals, more attainable goals, and that's the way you reach the big goal. Those two things have I think have helped me a lot.
Yeah. It's funny how when I ask for advice, a lot of times I'm hoping that people will tell me some like crazy complicated thing I've never heard of or never thought of before. And like over and over, it's like, oh no, just live the fundamentals harder. Like, have an even deeper commitment to the fundamentals. It seems to be the answer so many times. Well, guys, thanks for doing this. And good luck on your endeavors.
Thank you so much, Jess. Terrell, good to see you.
Likewise.
Hey, Terrell. Until next time, get us another great guest like this.
Awesome. Will do.
Okay, bye, everyone.